Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com. Hey, now everybody, welcome to episode 331 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm going to go ahead and remind everyone, if you like the podcast, please review and share on either iTunes, Stitcher, whatever you're listening on. Go ahead and tell your friends about it. Any help at all you can give us, so we greatly appreciate it. I'm Trevor Anderson. Throw you over to Jason Rugard. He has a rundown for us.
All right, on tonight's show, we have reviews for Justice League, Daddy's Home 2, and Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond, the documentary that premiered on Netflix this past weekend, as well as our thoughts for the trailers of Rampage, A Quiet Place, and Strangers 2, Pray at Night. Our first film is Justice League.
How many of you are there?
Not enough.
8 people abducted from or near Star Labs. Here's the potential perp.
Parademons.
Okay.
The demons must have caught the scent of another box. They carried people away to find out what they know.
So the 8 may still be alive.
9.
Ugh.
The head of Star Labs was taken as well.
You made it. So then, there must be a nest nearby.
I plotted all the sightings in Metropolis, Gotham. No pattern, I can see. The lines on the map don't converge.
On land. These lead back to Braxton Island, between the two cities.
Gotham Harbor. These are air vents. They all lead down to the tunnel to Metropolis project that was abandoned in 29.
Do you really think that...
Oh, wow, they really just vanish. Huh? Oh. That's rude.
That's Warner Brothers' expensive Justice League, and fueled by his restored faith in humanity, Bruce Wayne seeks out the help of his newfound allies in a pair, I guess there's a sextuplet, men, of odd people. This is a very mediocre movie. I was pretty disappointed in this on several occasions. It's light enough to be passable. But once again, on the heels of Thor and just rewatching Civil War recently and just seeing what Marvel has done and how effortlessly they seem to do it, this just seems so lead-footed once again. Even with Whedon's small touches, it wasn't enough to save this movie for me. There were some great visuals throughout it. I appreciated the lightened visual tone. Superman's suit specifically seemed to be a little bit lighter this time around. I liked some of the iconic images of Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman and these other people doing these things, but there's just a lack of chemistry between these actors, these characters. I realize that I like these characters more as icons as opposed to characters as they are in the Marvel movies. So I can't recommend this, but it's with reservations that I don't recommend this because there is some redeeming quality to this movie. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. I'm just not a Zack Snyder fan at this point anymore, I guess, really. And even with the Joss Whedon stuff in here, it's not enough to save this. The storyline is just brutal here. It's so boring and stale is the best way I can say it. Even when he goes to get the team together, it is not exciting. You know, there's not a lot of excitement in this movie. The bad guy is incredibly basic. And he really just shows up to get some boxes that he needs to put together, and then it will destroy the world. That's the plot. That's the entire plot of the film. And it just feels wasted. You know, it's weird to say, you mentioned Marvel. It's weird to say that, like, you know, Thor 3, the third Thor movie, is somehow outdoing the Justice League movie, right? I mean, that would be like, if you swap this around, if you swap DC Marvel around here, that would be like saying Aquaman 3 somehow outdid the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird, right? It's a weird thing to say.
I think you hit it right on the head, though, when you said boring and dull, because that's just what this movie is to me. This is no better than a Smallville episode or something you see on television from a story standpoint, and maybe it was pared down. I started watching this and thinking about Mission Impossible and how the first one was so complex, and let's say that's Batman versus Superman, and people bitched about it, so they just really overly simplified the plot from Mission Impossible 2, almost to a laughable degree, but still made a good movie out of it, or a fun movie. This, even though he's lacking that fun, is overly simplified to the point of just it nullifies. It's Sound and Fury, and there's nothing to get involved with at any point.
There's zero emotion as well in this. You know, I mean, Batman, this is one of the first times where I've seen a Batman movie, and I was just underwhelmed with Batman in general. And I was thinking at first, like, God, is just Ben Affleck not a very good Batman? And I thought, no, wait, I've seen him before. He's fine, you know? And in clips and small doses in here, he's perfectly fine. But the movie overall, like, this has got to be one of the worst portrayals of any of these characters that I've seen, you know, especially after the Wonder Woman movie. Why is she so dull in this? She just has nothing to do, you know? I will say that, like, her... The action scene of her stopping the bank robbery thing was pretty damn good, but how is that? Well, just that scene. Where's that stuff in the rest of the movie, especially in like the final fight, which just comes down to Cyborg just standing over that and then just like bothering the bad guy the whole time, you know, just bugging the shit out of him until finally, you know, no spoilers, I guess, until finally, right? If anyone's seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. It's ridiculous. Like that whole subplot of the Superman thing, which I might as well just say, because it's clearly in the movie, it says it right at the beginning, Henry Cavill. It's just done. It's just so wasted.
The whole thing is just misguided. This is a lot of wasted energy all around here. I think that they're in trouble moving forward because none of these characters, Wonder Woman, say, for is interesting enough to start a franchise or go in another direction for standalone films. I don't think The Flash or Aquaman, I know they've already completed photography on Aquaman, so that's coming, but they are going to be in trouble here. As much as I like MoMA, he's rendered charismatic free in this. I didn't like any of the choices costume-wise, attitude-wise, writing. There's a lot of things in the trailer that are missing from
when
this.
He was sitting
what's
on
up
the,
with
on
Cavill's
the whip?
You saw the,
it was
the floating
pretty good.
Cavill's floating upper lip.
You know, yeah, I know, right? You can tell. Isn't that so weird to see it? I was like, oh my God, why is the CGI in these DC movies so horrendous? I mean, this thing is like a decade, you know, back in as far as CG wise goes. It just looks terrible. And I have to say, I mean, you brought up like this looks like a TV stuff. Really, DC is killing it in the TV area. How are they not able to translate, you know, these rich storylines from these TV shows into a 2-hour long movie? Like, why does that not work here? Where's that going? Where's the breakdown?
I would almost say to Warner Brothers at this point, just stop and get out of this, you know, chasing your tail, wagging the dog situation here, and let Marvel focus on these and just go back to doing what you do well, which is make mid-budget to high-budget action and dramas and things like that, because this whole superhero building is just – it's passed them by. It really has.
Well, they have to get rid of Zack Snyder. As much as I would hate to say it, that you got to move on from Zack Snyder. He's killing this whole thing. He really is. And I know people out there love it. There's a call right now, a petition to get the Zack Snyder director's cut of this. But I'm telling you, Joss Whedon was not the problem with this movie.
Not at all. Not at all. All right, so let's move on. Let's talk about what's next.
Daddy's Home 2.
Did you touch the thermostat? Did you turn it up?
Well, of course not. Did somebody fiddle with the thermostat?
Yes, it's 85 degrees.
85? Do you have any idea how much even a few degrees can impact the gas bill?
Of course I do. It's unthinkable.
Dad? Kurt, what's going on in here? Why is it so hot?
Someone fiddled with the thermostat.
What? Who would do that?
What do you think you're doing?
It's roasting in here.
I like to sleep with my window open.
Hey, kid. Are you allowed to touch the thermostat at your mom's house?
Duh.
What is going on?
Adriana, she turned up the thermostat.
Said she fiddles with the thermostat at your place anytime she damn well pleases.
Is that true? Tell me that's not true. Oh, criminy, Dusty, you might as well give her your wallet and your 401k while you're at it.
Brad, do you let the kids touch the thermostat at your house?
What? No. The thermostat is a sacred covenant. I can't believe we're even talking about this. This is madness.
All right, Dusty and Brad have joined forces to provide their kids with a perfect Christmas. The newfound partnership is put to the test when Dusty's old-school macho dad and Brad's ultra-affectionate and emotional dad arrive just in time to throw the holiday into complete chaos. Coming right off the heels of Bad Mom's Christmas, for me, this movie pretty much knocked it out of the park, much like the first one did. I'd say this is a hair below the original, but you know, Mel Gibson and John Lithgow are just absolutely great in this. I thought both Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, again, doing the same shtick, and it worked this time as well. I also really loved, much like the first Daddy's Home, that not all of this movie is in the trailer. And so there are some surprises in here and some intelligent things like this thermostat little gig they had going here, which I think is very intelligent as far as an understanding of exactly what it's like to be a dad.
I didn't like the movie at all. I'm surprised that you liked it as much as you did. I will agree with you when I said that Lithgow and Mel Gibson do have chemistry, so much so that I was a little upset that they didn't have more time together. I would like to see a movie that just focused on their characters moving forward. They both deserve more time in this movie, which is dull when they're off screen. I thought the Wahlberg and Ferrell schtick, that's old hat at this point. They're doing their thing. And Will Ferrell has his moments in this, which is it's kind of sad that there's so far and few between. And for a family film, I mean, the bit you played there in the clip is funny, and I like that about it. And this movie portrays itself as a family film, but there's a whole really strange, misguided section where the daughter gets drunk, which I thought was way out of line for this family film, which seemed to be would have been something that would have been in Bad Moms. And this was very close to Bad Moms. And so much so with the titles on screen, with this 5 days till Christmas. It was bizarre there. And tell me this, I thought it was so strained at times. I mean, the John Cena stuff was not funny at all. I didn't think the conflicts were anything to laugh about. I really, in part, I was so bored about this. I kept thinking, man, they're showing Mel Gibson getting shit-faced with Mark Wahlberg, and he's a recovering alcoholic. And I my brain was going elsewhere. And even the last bit about Ferrell's new stepdad was weak. The whole thing to me was way, way below where the first one was. I will agree that they did save things that weren't in the trailer, particularly the bit with the Christmas lights I thought was great. So there are some moments in here that are good, but that last sequence in the movie theater, I mean, what was that? I thought that was almost like
I liked
a
that
pitch
scene.
To go to the movies during the holidays.
Exactly. I liked that scene. I like the movie. I agree with you. It's not the first one. You know, it is beneath that. But I still liked it. I think coming off of Bad Moms 2 is perhaps the deciding factor for me.
This is better than Bad Moms 2. I'll say that. This is better than that.
It's not even better. It's far better.
But you didn't think, honestly, you didn't think it was out of, there were some things that were just way out of line in this?
I don't know. How old are you? I mean,
what's the audience for this? What are you doing? Movie. That clip you played was, it didn't sit right to me. I just thought, like, where is this going? Like, I didn't understand the rules of this movie. It seemed so pat and pasted at some point, and then really overly aggressive at other times. I couldn't get the vibe of this movie at all. I thought it was very,
well, I think that we've had a lot of movies like this that have done this kind of stuff. Obviously throughout the 80s and 90s, when we were growing up, comedies, even family comedies, you might call them, were very adult at times. I don't think that that's out of character. I mean, I don't think it has to be a sweet, cute little movie the whole time through. It can be a raunchy movie.
I felt it was making a play for some sort of Christmas family, you know, like a annual watching type thing. And I just thought that was a weird play for it, especially with the whole, because the worst kid in the theater I was at, there was a lot of kids in there. And it was a big, my theater was packed for this.
Well, they can see it. No.
People were packed in my,
but I went to the early show. There's enough people.
All right. So you recommend it then?
Yeah, I liked it.
All right. All right, so we disagree on that one. Let's move on and talk about Jim and Andy, The Great Beyond, the Netflix documentary, available now.
So, Jim.
Yes?
How would you start this movie?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jim Carrey, and how are you this evening? All righty, then.
Finding out you have something special and it gets a reaction, that's how I got attention and love.
I've watched the stars fall silent.
from you. Andy Kaufman came in to turn reality on its head and not stop when the cameras stopped.
You, Europe!
Andy Kaufman cared less about making his audience laugh than keeping them confused.
WrestleMania! He blew my mind. When I heard I had the part, I was looking at the ocean, and that's the moment when Andy came back to make his movie.
Hello.
What happened after was out of my control.
Andy, that's enough, perfect.
I don't like it. I want to do one more.
Andy felt it was necessary to stay in the character.
He's exactly the way Andy was.
It's totally surreal.
And this crazy melodrama started happening all over the place.
That's Jim Carrey, who earned critical acclaim as the in a Golden Globe for his performance as Andy Kaufman in The Man on the Moon. This is a documentary and behind-the-scenes look at a lot of the production footage that was taken by Kaufman's former girlfriend, Lynn Margulies, and his former writing partner, Bob Zemunda. This is available now on Netflix. As you can hear in the clip there, this is a Carrey that's very open and some might say spacey. And there's a very telling moment in this documentary, which was intended as an EPK, a press kit, kind of a puff piece to sell the movie at the time, where Universal executives said, "We don't want this footage getting out because it's going to make you look like an asshole." And it does. And I think the interesting thing about this documentary is if this had come out at the time, I would have been so down on Jim Carrey. But because he's had 20 years basically of a career and retrospection and introspection, all those kind of things, it's way more interesting to hear him talk about it in retrospectiveness. So I think fascinating documentary. I hated him as Kaufman on set and his characters. Hey, what a pain in the ass. But my God, this is compelling, this documentary. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, much like the Conan O'Brien Can't Stop thing, which made Conan O'Brien look like an asshole, this is the same thing to Jim Carrey, but having him be there today, you know, looking back on it, makes it a little bit easier to swallow and a little bit easier to understand to have him there to explain kind of what he was going through mentally, you know, rather than just showing the clips of him. Because if it was just the behind-the-scenes footage and that was it, yeah, he'd look terrible. I think the other thing about this is how much people were in on the behind the scenes stuff and what was going on, that this movie, much like, Andy Kaufman would do or anything like that, perhaps paints it in a realistic light that isn't so realistic, I believe. You know, I think that a lot of this stuff was understood by everyone there, that what was going on, you know, so mm-hmm. he wasn't actually really being too mean with people. And I feel like a lot of the stuff that happened, because I remember seeing a lot of this stuff, and I think a lot of it's publicity stunts. You know, I might be crazy, but I really do.
I just kept thinking, poor crew, poor Milos, who's trying to, I mean, you look at the, I don't know, because you look at the exasperation of somebody like Danny DeVito and Paul Giamatti these co-stars. They look, they're kind of like,
you can imagine, like,
irritated.
Week one, right, would be like, wow, this is interesting. This is weird. That's kind of how the documentary portrayed it, too. Like, whoa, this is so surreal. This is so weird. And, you know, by, you know, week three, week four, everyone's like, fucking A. Give me a break, buddy. Get out of here.
I think the problem with the documentary, and really this is the subject matter, I'm not the biggest fan of Andy Kaufman. I never was. I thought the movie that was made was a better performance than the movie itself. I thought it was kind of a lackluster and lacking of energy in a lot of areas. And I think I know why now, because so much fucking energy was spent behind the scenes doing all these shenanigans that by the time it came to making the movie, it almost seemed like he was tapped out. He was playing constantly. So where was, you know, what was real and what was not? And was his best stuff captured in front of the right cameras is what I'm saying.
I guess. I mean, I don't know. You can watch this and find out for yourself, I suppose. I think I like the movie myself, and I like Andy Kaufman, at least what he stood for. And so I understand what he was doing, but I don't think he was actually being very Andy Kaufman-like as a lot of the people in the documentary admit to, actually, throughout it. You know, he went too far. He was clearly being Jim Carrey obsessed with Andy Kaufman, you know.
Here's my last question about this, because at some point he starts talking about other movies he did, and specifically The Truman Show, which had a huge impact, and he says it was very prophetic on his life before and ever since. Would it have been just more interesting listening to Carey run down each movie in his career, because he says they all were a part of his mindset and his personality and where he was in his life at that moment, as opposed to just focusing on this?
I mean, I think it's very interesting to finally get to have Jim Carrey, and maybe this is, he only did this really because of the juxtaposition of the footage we're watching, but it calm and collected, speaking intelligently without going totally just bonkers, you know, as he often does with a lot of interviews and even a lot of film-centric interviews, you know, where he's talking about his work and stuff. He totally goes off the deep end. So yeah, I agree with you. I'd rather see that.
I used to think he was on the spectrum because he was so verbal. You know, he just would go off on things, and he was so just his vernacular was fantastic, and his energy level and whatnot. But I love the fact that he has the 20-year the gap between when it happened and now looking back on it and everything since then.
Yeah,
but it makes me like Carey even more. And he's
well, you can't. Can you decide? I can't decide, because watching this documentary, I'm thinking, God, I hate this guy. I hate method acting like this. I hate this type of stuff. It's too much. It's so stupid. Because there's no reason why this movie couldn't be exactly the same without him doing that, right? It could be. But then at the other point, he'll talk to you. Today's Jim Carrey will talk to you about what yesteryear's Jim Carrey was doing. And it's like, oh, you know, I get it, you know. So I don't know. It's interesting. Something Andy Kaufman would probably never have done. So
make some amazing comments too about getting trapped in a character and that character becoming you, unless you escape that character. And I kept thinking of Tom Cruise and him getting stuck in that kind of persona and never being able to walk away from it. And Carey, for better or worse, has been able to walk away from it, maybe too far away from it, some would say, but he's unburdened himself with a lot of things. And it's very rare for someone of his stardom and power to have done that in that business. Let's do the trailers.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert. Prepare for Trailer Addict.
All right, first up we have Rampage.
It's weird. You like hang out with animals more than people.
Yeah, well, animals get me. I rescued George when he was 2 years old. George never would have survived on his own.
He definitely trusts you.
Last night, George was 7 feet and weighed 500 pounds. George, you okay, buddy? You're scared. It's okay. This morning, he's 9 feet, pushing 1,000. What's happening to my friend?
Are you familiar with genetic editing? Changes will be incredibly unpredictable.
Is he the only one?
Oh, you didn't know about the 30-foot wolf?
Incoming!
The world is a bad.
Hell of a day, huh? Science experiments falling from the sky.
Having George on that plane is a big mistake.
I think we'll be all right.
Let's go save the world. It's coming back to me. Coming back. You have to evacuate Chicago. George didn't ask for this. They're gonna put him down. That's not happening. Just thinking, the only thing that's missing right now is a giant crocodile.
right, a rogue genetic experiment gone awry transforms a gentle ape into a raging monster in Rampage. Apparently, the only type of film Dwayne Johnson feels comfortable doing. This comes out April 20th next year, 2018. I'm a little skeptical here of this. I feel kind of like seeing flashes of Battleship here. Am I crazy?
Yeah, I just kept thinking, man, this is like one of the lower Schwarzenegger movies. You know, when he was in his prime,
but
and he would still do something like The Running Man that was, was really subpar for what he should be doing.
But it feels
this
like San Andreas, right? It's just San Andreas and Jumanji and some Godzilla type stuff, right?
He almost looks like he's wearing the same outfit from Jumanji.
He does the same movies, right? He literally does the same movies all the time. Why are all his action movies the same movie?
Because they're not done by good directors, let's be honest. This guy who's doing this movie with the San Andreas is not particularly an action filmmaker. He's just a guy who happened to have a good relationship with The Rock, and they are doing an action movie, just much like Skyscraper and Jumanji. He should work with a better action director. Why not get McTiernan? Why not get somebody – hell, get Roland Emmerich at this point. Why does this look so lightweight? It has nothing behind it. Hmm. The best thing about this trailer is the music, and that's because it's a great song, Slow Down. It's a good version of that song.
How could you say that? you're against all song slowdowns.
I know, but that one works.
Don't falter. Don't falter.
Really?
Hold strong.
Dwayne Johnson himself is a silverback. I mean, the man, I don't mean that because of his skin tone. I mean that because of his muscle boundness.
No,
The guy is a freak of nature from a genetic standpoint. So I just wish if he's going to work this hard, pick better projects, even though this will probably do well enough in foreign markets that
it feels like a very cheap King Kong knockoff as well. I don't know.
I don't know what I was expecting, but not some sort of like Project X. And I mean that from like the 1980s Project X, not the one from the 2000s. You know, it just seems
just looks cheap. It just looks like a CGI big budget
Borefest, you know,
movie thing that they just crap out nowadays. Yeah, it really just doesn't look. He's gonna, I don't know, maybe this isn't true, but at some point you figure he keeps doing this kind of stuff, he's gonna fade away, right? If he's not careful, if he doesn't do something that is memorable, people are gonna start forgetting him.
Even when Schwarzenegger was the number one star in the world, he had T2, he had Total Recall, he had True Lies, these ones that these kind of hits.
Yeah, take
that were
a
classics.
Risk. Take a damn Where risk. Are,
as much as I like Johnson, when was the last time he made like a memorable flick? I've seen them all. I mean, the Fast and Furiouses, the San Andreas, and the Central Intelligence. But which one was really memorable? There's none in it that you would go, like The Rundown. You know, we go back to The Rundown and things like that. Yeah. That's a damn good movie. Where are those? It's been a long time since he made
one. I mean, these make money, but they are completely forgettable. And in, you know, the long run, I'm not going to remember or even really want to revisit any of these.
Yeah, it's been a while since he's made something that's worthy of revisiting. All right, our next trailer is for A Quiet Place.
We have no audio for this because it's just music.
We have no audio. Well, let me tell you about this movie. This is a...
It's quiet. So let me tell you that. That's why we have no audio.
It's about a couple and their children who are fighting for survival when a supernatural force invades their isolated farmhouse. Judging from the trailer, either one or all of them are deaf and they are using sign language. And when there is a noise in this trailer, it's beautifully done with sound design. And when the kid knocks over the lantern there that starts the fire in the house that gets the supernatural being's attention, I jump just in the trailer.
Yes.
This is extremely effective. John Krasinski from The Office and his wife Emily Blunt co-star in this. And he's writing and directing this, I believe. Well done. Visually stark. I just hope this isn't one of those movies like The Witch and it comes at night that promises so much and has such an interesting trailer but cannot possibly pay off on what they are setting up.
I don't think that's going to be the case because I loved the little stuff after the sound happened, you know, and the little glimpses of this and that and you know, Emily Blunt in the bathtub and this over here. It does seem like they get separated and it looks like all hell breaks loose at some point. But at the same time, you got to be real quiet, right? I mean, or else the monster comes and gets you. So, yeah, it is interesting. I do like because I've thought the same thing. Like, how would they know sign language? Someone must actually be deaf, right? And then maybe that somehow helped them, learn to be quiet? I don't know.
I'm interested in
how it started. Where's this monster from? And are there other people? Because it seems like they could just leave, right? So it must be an end of the world thing, right?
Possibly. See, that's what I'm saying. This trailer is good enough that it intrigued both of us and that we're interested in finding out what happens further, which is what a good trailer is supposed to do. Whether it's a good movie remains to be seen, but the advertising for it is intriguing enough that we both have questions and want to know what the further story is. I just hope, like I said, that it can live up to the amount of suspense and dread that it's promising. This is an extremely effective trailer, and usually when it's done anything. This well, that's what I'm saying. It's all done by editing and sound design.
We haven't seen the monster. We haven't seen anything yet, so... So yeah, hopefully they, as you say, are able to build. You do have to worry that it would be such a slow build,
right?
That might ruin it. And because it's going to be so quiet, I don't know. I just don't know. Looks this good though.
April 6th, 2018, yeah. 3 weeks before Rampage.
So quiet and then a lot of noise.
Yeah.
It's quiet before the storm. All right, up next is Strangers Pray at Night.
Leave us alone!
But we've just started.
Okay, so this is basically a road trip movie. People go to a mobile home park to visit some relatives. It's all mysteriously deserted. The people in the masks, they come out and they try to get them, right? Really, none of this is really in the trailer. The trailer is just, of course, as any horror movie like this, people screaming and running and people wearing masks. And I haven't seen the original Strangers, the first one, but... If I am to understand it, it's actually a psychological thriller and whatnot, and it's suspenseful and stuff. And this looks more like we're taking the straight horror route with it.
Yeah, the first one's a good movie. I just rewatched it recently. It is not really an outright horror movie. It's more of a psychological suspense thriller. This, interesting enough, that little girl there is Bailey Madison, who was the daughter in Just Go With It, the really adorable kid with the accent. Who was playing Jennifer Aniston's daughter in that movie. She's all grown up now in this. And this, to me, looks like they went the route of Joyride and Vacancy 2 and the direct-to-DVD Road Less Traveled. And actually, that's just the Road Well Traveled.
This comes out March 9th. This comes out in theaters.
Well, this looks like it should be coming out straight to Redbox because there's nothing interesting here. And this movie is effective. This isn't The Purge, you know, which is kind of what it reminded me of with the mask.
It's unfortunate, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but yeah, this does not look to do what The Purge 2 did for The Purge. This looks not to be anything like that.
Well, it's a sequel 9 years in the making, and this doesn't look like it was the movie that they intended to make initially. So if you've seen The Strangers, which you haven't, but I recommend highly that everyone go out there and watch it, it leaves things very definite, and there's not a sequel to be had. So... this is based on a different whole story. They say it's true. You know, when they say it's based on a true story, it might have the inkling of a
truth
to it. Right,
so someone got
it.
Killed somewhere, so true story.
And it was a mobile home murder somewhere, yeah. And now they made it into this based on an article of a true story. Yeah. I'm not too interested in this. It's a teaser trailer, but at the same time, when things like the jump scares in this, quote-unquote jump scares, when she's in the... I don't know, it's a fucking tube, and the lady comes out and she says, you know, because we're doing this, why not just kill her then? What are you trying to? Are you trying to scare her to death?
Yeah, I mean, after a while, it's kind of desensitizing. I mean, I agree with that. Whenever you try to take the bad guys and make them into a thing, you know, even you know, in Jason and with Freddy and stuff, those characters eventually kind of overcome that and become bigger than the story, and then they. I just don't see that happening with this, though. And a lot of people try to do that with horror movies, and it doesn't, it very rarely does it work.
Well, you just look at the two different trailers we just talked about, A Quiet Place and The Strangers 2, and look at the level of filmmaking and the quality of both of them, and you can see where creativeness and inventiveness is going and just run-of-the-mill schlock and hacky filmmaking is at, because that's what it looks like with Strangers 2. All right, well, that's going to wrap up episode 331. We want to thank you all for joining us and want to remind you again to go to iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you may be listening to this podcast. Rate, review the show. Let us know if you like it, what we could be doing better or worse. Let us know. out there, we want to say thank you to everyone listening, every country that's tuning in, particularly Australia, China, India. We are all over the place now. And, of course, the U.S. of A. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh, my. Another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to MovieMavericks.com/warp9. Engage!